The following Dharma discourse was given by Jeffrey Shugen Arnold at Zen Mountain Monastery. Shugen Roshi is the head of the Mountains and Rivers Order and abbot of the monastery. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org. Thank you for listening.
This is from Master Dogen's Shobogenzo. Fascicle, the King of Samadhis. Shakyamuni Buddha said to the assembly, "When you sit in the meditation posture, you realize samadhi in body and mind, and give rise to an awesome virtue that people respect, like the sun illuminating and refreshing the world. This sitting removes obscurities from the mind and lightens the body, so that exhaustion is set aside. Enlightenment becomes as natural as a dragon curled up at rest. A demon is frightened even by a picture of someone sitting in the meditation posture. How much more so by a living person who realizes the way sitting motionless and at ease." So I thought it would be good to begin this session in meditation. And so in the Shobogenzo, Dogen has several fascicles on samadhi, focused on samadhi, different kinds of samadhi. Samadhi is one of the Eightfold Path, effort, meditation, mindfulness, and concentration, which are the sort of meditation-based aspects of the path. And samadhi is often described as a single-minded focus. But that falls short of really describing all that samadhi is. And so if you think of practice as a continuum, zazen is a continuum that has no, it has very specific teachings and very particular ways of practicing that make it zazen, make it a meditation practice within Buddha Dharma, but that it is continually evolving. It's never fixed. And that as long as a person practices, if they practice diligently, it will continue to evolve. Samadhi is also like this, and of course they're intimately bound together. Mindfulness is a focusing of the mind on an object, the breath. Traditionally is one of the main object-focused practices that we take up in the beginning. There are many others, but that's sort of the most prevalent one. And that as mindfulness develops, gets stronger, it naturally begins to shift into a state of concentration or samadhi. And one of the things that's important to appreciate about both mindfulness and samadhi, because concentration is a word that's used in English, so anyone can experience a state of concentration in any activity. In Buddhism, according to the Buddha, concentration has a very particular meaning, and one of the things that is essential in that concentration, and as well as in mindfulness, is a sense of morality or a sense of compassion. In other words, to be very concentrated in an action where you're doing some harm is not concentration according to the Eightfold Path. It might be a state of mind of concentration. The mind might be in a state of concentration, but it's not samadhi. Because samadhi necessarily has that quality of morality or compassion. That's why it leads to realization, which is ultimately a state of peace. A student was asked, Master Zhaozhou, what is meditation? What is Zazen? Zhaozhou said, it's not meditation. The student said, well, what is it? And he said, it's alive. And maybe that's the best way of describing it. So here, Dogen is quoting the Buddha, saying that when you sit in the meditation posture, you realize samadhi in body and mind and give rise to an awesome virtue that people respect. In other words, he's speaking to the power of this meditation and the posture that we take and the samadhi that comes forth in the body and mind. Like the sun illuminating and refreshing the world, bringing light and warmth, the sitting removes obscurities from the mind, enlightens the body so that exhaustion is set aside. And in order for that to be experienced by the student, by the meditator, we have to sit into the obscurities and the exhaustion that has become habitual. In other words, we can't just willfully decide that we are going to put all of that aside and step into this sitting that Dogen is describing. And so, and at the same time, it's so important that we hear in it. So if we are deep in our obscurities or deep in our exhaustion, we can know that that's not all there is. And that helps us to trust and have faith that if we continue to practice with the present mind, because that's the one you've got, that that will lead us to something more. Enlightenment becomes as natural as a dragon curled up. Perhaps that within all of this, that this is a way to return to our most natural everything. And that it requires all of these skillful means, which we have to learn, right? We don't just arrive knowing all of this. In order to do that, in order to return to that most natural state that exists within us. Because we have developed ways of being in this body and mind that in a sense are natural in the sense that they're universally human. So we didn't learn them from outer space or something. But they are not natural in the sense that they aren't in accord with our basic nature, which is why they create suffering. And what's it? You know, if we keep reflecting on the importance and the sort of tremendous significance of this being a non-dual dharma, a dharma which is not based in division and boundary and separating and creating highs and lows, that's how we enter. But this is really based in not only bringing us to that realization of unity, of non-duality, but that every practice, every teaching is embedded in that. And so too with sitting, that sitting, the way Dogen is describing it, and you are not different. Sitting is not something that happens to you. It's not something you do to it. And so what arises in the mind and in the body, all that we experience in our sitting, they themselves, all of those sensations and thoughts and memories and emotions and all of it, are an aspect of the self. So as they arise, we see, we study that aspect of the self. We become familiar with it. We learn how to meet it without hating it and without clinging to it. And we learn that by doing that. It's not an intellectual thing. We're learning how to do that by embodying that middle path and discover that those things themselves are fine. In and of themselves, they're fine. Dogen said, all dharmas abide within their own dharma state. But we add value and meaning, like and dislike, good and bad, because we've learned to do that, because that's an aspect of our consciousness that does that, because we experience pain and pleasure. So it comes pretty easily. And when we add that value and that meaning, that significance, good or bad, to those experiences, then they become heavily weighted, right? They become bound. We become bound to them. And so we practice not aversion and not pursuing, not grasping and not denying, to remove the obscurities from the mind, so that those things which appear to be obscuring, that seem to be burdening us, and that cause us to get into states of thought and emotion and view that then we can hurt others, that we begin to see that none of those things that arise have any of those qualities within them. They all have the same nature. They're all empty of any intrinsic quality, but we experience them so differently because of our karma. That in the moment, the first moment when we experience something, a sensation, a thought, a memory, an image, whatever it might be, that our consciousness, which is at least this lifetime old, floods that experience, that sensation, that object, with all of its accumulated beliefs and associations and likes and dislikes and everything. So quickly that we don't see that happening, so it seems as though all of those experiences, that experience we're having of it, is in it. So that's why I drew that story of on the first night that the Buddha said, it's like if you throw a dog a stick, the dog runs after the stick. So that's what we tend to do. We keep going after the stick. We keep getting seduced by the stick. And that doesn't mean to ignore the stick. You need to see that because that's an aspect of yourself, of the mind. And it's telling us, it's helping us to understand that karmic self. We need to see the stick. But what's more important is the one who's throwing the stick, which happens to be somebody you already know. You. And what that does is it shifts the energy. So when Dogen says, turn the light around and look at the one who's throwing the stick. So the lion goes after the stick thrower, not interested in the stick. Right? The lion wants to get right to the source, not interested in running after the stick. The lion looks at the dog and said, are you kidding? It's a game. It looks fun for a while, but it wears us out. So that's why samadhi lightens the body and sets exhaustion aside, because we're no longer expending so much energy pursuing. And Sesshin is very much about this. It is challenging, right? That's why we don't just open the door and say, everybody come on in to do Sesshin, right? Doesn't matter if you've sat before, haven't sat before, what your intention is. No, we slow people down and say, wait a minute, do you know what's happening here? Do you know what's going to happen? Do you sure you want to do this? It is going to challenge you. And in that, because this is the way we're built, it allows us to meet those boundaries, those edges, a body, a mind, of energy, of emotion, of our history, of our attention, our spirit, our trust. I mean, just think of any quality that exists within you and it's probably already shown up. So that we can see the stick that we're chasing after, we can turn attention to the one who's throwing it. We can see what are the lines that we draw, what do we put outside of the lines, what do we bring inside. We can see those habits. That's why it's so important in sitting to really be cultivating a very bright and sharp awareness so that you don't become numb to seeing things over and over again. Right? That's not helping. That's what tends to happen when we have the same experience over and over, is we stop experiencing it. And Zazen is extraordinary in its capacity to help us to learn how to be fresh each time. And what happens when we see the same thing happening over and over and over again is what? You get tired of it. That's a good thing. Because it is tiring. And when we begin to see the same things happening that are arising out of meditation, out of letting go of those obscurities, those things that begin to arise again and again, like mindfulness, like samadhi, those things are never tiring. They're enlivening. Sometimes people ask, how do I know if I've lost track of time? Am I in samadhi or did I just zone out? And I'll say, what was your experience when your awareness resumed? If you're kind of, you know, dull and diffuse and so on, that's not samadhi. So it's really important to see those habits. It's not comfortable. It's not necessarily pleasant. But that's part of it. It's not just getting weary of it, but it's getting no longer interesting. Those things cease to be so interesting. As long as they're really tantalizing and they're still like meat on that bone, then it's hard not to keep pursuing them. It's hard not to keep running after that. But when we really get weary of them, they still will arise because the habit is still strong. But we're much less tempted to keep going into it over and over. It gets much easier to let go. So we can lighten and bring forth that great vital force that really is the great heart of the bodhisattva. Dogen says a demon is frightened by even just a picture of someone sitting. It's kind of interesting, you know, if for someone who has no inward-looking practice or part of their life, that doesn't make sense to them, they're not interested, everything is out, out, out. Then to see somebody sitting can actually be threatening. You know, in the early years when I was here, and Buddhism was still much younger and less popular and known, and so many people coming into practice were really practicing alone in their world. Like typically, practitioners were like the only person they knew in their world that was meditating. And very often, family, friends, partners, and so on, parents, whoever saw them or knew that they were meditating, you know, didn't understand it, sometimes didn't like it, and sometimes were felt threatened by it. Like, what are you doing in there? And that's where to see that, the power, the strength of that image of someone just sitting in the meditation posture. What is that evoking? It's someone who is unafraid to sit, to stop, to turn inward, to see themselves, to not be looking outward, seeking approval, affirmation, to seem to be completely contained, self-possessed, sufficient. And how for someone who feels very much otherwise, that can be threatening, that can be scary. One of the Buddha's nuns, Alavika, one day dressed, took her bowl and robes and went into Savatthi on her begging rounds. And after she had finished and returned and had her meal, she went into a forest grove to sit in seclusion. And then Mara, the evil one, desiring to arouse fear and trepidation and terror in Alavika, I don't know how that would be pronounced correctly. I'll say Alavika. and wanting to make her fall away from seclusion, approached her and addressed her in verse, saying, "There is no escape in the world, so what will you do with your seclusion? You can't escape the world. Why don't you enjoy the delights of sensual pleasure now? Otherwise, you'll regret it later that you wasted this time." And Alavika thought, who is this saying these words? Is it a human being or some other kind of being? And then it occurred to her, oh, this is Mara, who has recited this verse desiring to arouse fear and trepidation and terror in me, who is trying to pull me away from my seclusion. And then she said to Mara, "There is an escape in the world which I have closely touched with wisdom. O evil one, kinsman of the negligent." I like that. Mara is the kinsman, the friend, the supporter of the negligent, of the one who turns away. She says, "You do not know that state. Sensual pleasures are like sword stakes. The skandhas are their chopping block. What you call sensual delight has become for me non-delight. What you're trying to lure me into is no longer of so much interest to me." And then Mara, realizing that the bhikkhuni Alavika knows me, was sad and disappointed and disappeared. I always have an image of, oh. And the thread in all of these encounters with Mara, with the Buddha and with all of the Buddha's disciples, is that it's that moment where the disciple recognizes Mara, that Mara is defeated, has no more power. And that's why we have to sit and turn in and stay there and see and keep seeing and not turn away. And so Zazen is a threat to Mara. Mara is disturbed by this person practicing the way, motionless and at ease, awake and at ease. And she responds, Alavika responds from that very seat, as natural as a dragon. She's not threatened, she's not defensive, she's clear, she's confident, she knows. And she speaks from that place. But that story, as with all of these other stories and the koans so often, are not telling us of all the previous moments where Mara showed up and it was not quite like this. She didn't see Mara so quickly. We get tempted in, we listen, we follow, we turn away, we walk away, we get up from our seat. And those moments will occur, and in a sense they must occur. We have to have those moments because they teach us that that's a choice we can make. Right? But then if we're practicing, we see the consequences of those choices and where they lead. And that helps us to undermine the belief, the faith, the conviction that those responses, that mind, that way of being is to be continued. And Sangha is the field that we enter into where we both see ourselves and we see others. And we're also seen by each other. And in that way, we can then be bodhisattvas to each other, being supportive and caring and honest and trustworthy, but we can also be Mara to ourselves and others in moments when we're doubting or being selfish or criticizing or uncaring. And that's why to be practicing together, we really pledge to be together in that better way. Within compassion and kindness and commitment, so that we can then hold each other's trust well. And because we're practitioners and we're still, Mara still shows up, and we still get seduced, we're not always going to, sometimes we're going to rub up against each other. We're going to be critical or hurt each other. And so we also have to be able to hold that and work that out, both within ourselves and with each other. And one of the important things about it is to realize that we can do that actually, which is extremely important, because if we met you at the door and say, okay, here's the deal, and you cannot make any mistakes, who would be sitting in this room? Right? Not me. And so there has to be that tolerance, and there has to be accountability, that commitment to each other. Dogen goes on to say, as the Buddha said, a demon is startled and frightened by even a picture of someone sitting, even more so by a living person. So we know that the merit of such sitting is immeasurable. The ordinary everyday sitting is itself boundless joy. And because that may not always be your experience, how else can you think of joy? If you don't think of joy as the emotional experience of happiness or lightness of being or pleasure. In other words, can you think of joy in a way that includes everything that you experience in Zazen? It's all inclusive. And call that joy. Well, what is joyful about that? I remember thinking about that early on when I would encounter teachings such as this. And I thought, well, in those moments, most of the time, I don't want to be somewhere else. I don't want to be someone else. I don't want to try and escape from this. Most of the time, there were times where I would have made some exchanges. I remember the story of Hueka cutting off his arm, and I said, I don't know, an arm's a lot, but I don't know. But I'd need a guarantee. So, of course, that's not coming. So Dogen quotes the Buddha saying, therefore you should sit in the meditation posture. And so he taught his disciples how to sit. And this is what has been transmitted down to us. Right? This is the first thing that happens when somebody, each of us, came into this place of training. After a few courtesies, we went into this hall or that hall, or the hall at the temple, wherever we were, and we received instruction in meditation. We received what is arguably the most important thing in terms of Buddha Dharma, in terms of this path, if this is our path, that we will ever have received. And in a way, we receive it at exactly the moment we need it, and we are so not ready. Right? That's how it is. And so that's how we launch. And there are so many forms of meditation within Buddhism, of course, outside of Buddhism, meditation means kind of whatever you want. But within Dharma, and really outside of Buddhism too, meditation is always based in some view, right? Some way of seeing things, some idea of what the effort is, or what the endeavor is why are we doing this? What is this helping to do? Why are you doing this? Where is this taking you? And so within our tradition, Zazen is completely embedded within the teachings. That's why it is so integral to the Eightfold Path, that every teaching within the practice-based traditions of Buddhism are all designed to bring you to the meditations, see, into this sitting posture. Morality is sometimes spoken of as a kind of precursor to meditation, to really prepare yourself to be able to really deeply do meditation. First, just work on cleaning the house a bit. It's completely based in what the Buddha realized in his enlightenment. Everything that we do in meditation comes out of that. And so the Buddha quotes, the Dogen quotes the Buddha saying, so some outsiders try to practice by standing on their tiptoes, others by standing continuously, others by adopting the yoga posture of hooking their feet over their shoulders. So he's just mentioning a few of the practices of India, of the time of the Buddha. He said, these people develop unbalanced minds that founder in an ocean of delusion because their postures are unnatural. Why do I teach my disciples to just sit up straight in the meditation posture? Because it's easy to regulate the mind when the body is upright. If the body is straight, the mind isn't dull. Instead, the mind is forthright. The intention is true. And mindfulness more readily becomes present. If the mind scatters or the body leans, gather yourself together in your body and mind and resume the upright posture. If you want to bring forth samadhi and enter into it, you should gather together all your distracted thoughts and scattered mind within this posture, which is not just thoughts, it's scattered everything. Whatever is scattered, whatever is dispersed, whatever is restless, and bring it in to this. Practice in this way and you will manifest and intimately enter the king of samadhis. It's easy to regulate the body when the mind when the body is upright. And of course, he's speaking of these two as two, but they're not. And to regulate the mind is to work with the whole body and mind, the heart, past, present, and future, everything. And in that, mindfulness is present. Being aware of the breath means being aware of sensation, means being aware of your physical body, of the space that you're in, of your energy, of tension, of relaxation, of dullness, of agitation, of whatever, the 10,000 things, the whole universe, while you're focusing on the breath, or while you're concentrated into a koan, or while you're sitting shikantaz. It doesn't matter what the form of practice is. That whatever the form of practice is, everything is open, so that everything can be seen while you're remaining focused in one place, motionless and calm. Dogen says, sitting in the meditation posture is a forthright body, a forthright mind, a forthright body-mind, a forthright Buddha ancestor, a forthright practice realization, a forthright top of the head, and a forthright life stream. Forthright means direct, straightforward, honest, simple, trusting. In a word, no bullshit. There's no time for that anymore. There's a point where that's really not interesting. I was down in North Carolina recently with my family, and my brother was talking about how he can, and he's not like a big, you know, social media guy or something, but he said that he would go into TikTok sometimes and like an hour would go by. And I thought, huh. So when I came home, I've never been on TikTok, so this is gonna, just bear with me, okay? I know nothing, so I'm speaking from that, like I was just born. So I thought, what's that about? So I opened it up, and I looked at something, you know, that lasted like, I don't know, 15 seconds, and then it led to something else, it led to something else, and after about 5 minutes, I thought, I don't ever have to do that again. Like, I really didn't get any aspect of it at all. I thought, oh, this would be a perfect definition of an utter waste of time. For those of you who love TikTok, just my opinion. Dogen says, one who does not step forward cannot accept the Buddha's teaching. And so which means we have to step forward again and again and again. When do we step forward? when it's needed, when we would be retreating, when we would be stuck, when we need to take responsibility, when we need to recognize this is actually my practice. This is not something that's happening to me. To step forward. He also says, if you are unbending, you cannot stop floating along in birth and death. So, okay, so now we also need to learn how to bend, to shift, to let go. And we have to do that again and again and again until it becomes as effortless as a dragon curled up at rest. And as it becomes more natural, it becomes more effortless. It becomes more integrated. Dogen says, the world-honored one always sat in this meditation posture, and his disciples authentically transmitted it. The Buddha taught humans and devas how to sit in this meditation posture. It is the mind seal that is authentically transmitted. The Buddha sat in this meditation posture under the Bodhi tree for 50 small eons, 60 great eons, innumerable unclassifiable eons. Perhaps he sat for 3 weeks, or maybe only for a few hours. I love that. He sat for 60 large eons, or maybe just for a few hours. What is he saying? Buddha never, Dogen never says anything without a reason. Why did he say that? Does it matter? Transmitted through so many generations, and now we have received this gift. How long did the Buddha sit? Maybe an incalculably long time. Maybe just for a few hours. In any case, Dogen said, the Buddha Zazen, in any case, in other words, what does this have to do with you? In any case, the Buddha Zazen is the turning of the wondrous wheel of Dharma. His lifetime guidance is contained within it. That's really the essential matter. The Buddha spent his whole time teaching, giving his life really to us. That's what all of our ancestral teachers did. But what they really gave to us was this. Because all of those teachings have to find a way in. How do they find their way in? So that they're not just teachings. How do they become experienced, practiced, verified? Because that's the only way they can be handed on to the next group. Dogen says, here on this seat, in this sitting, meditation, Buddha mudra, nothing is lacking. The yellow and red scrolls of the sutras, that is, the scrolls that contain all the sutras, the teachings are here. In this moment of sitting, Buddha sees Buddha, and all beings attain Buddhahood. And so to really, appreciate that while our own experience of Zazen is limited, right? It's limited to our present experience. But that's all. That's its only limitation, is that it's limited to our present experience. Which means, by definition, if we continue, we will continue to experience it in new ways, in more ways, as it is, all that it contains, and see more and more why these teachers, all the way back to the Buddha, have held this up as such an important practice. So when we reduce it to a word like meditation, or to a technique, or to an exercise, or to something that is good for me to do, all of those are fine, but they're not what Dogen is speaking of. He's inviting us in, having dedicated so much of his life to this practice, he's inviting us in to his world, his mind, his experience, his zazen. Not because that's enough, but so that we find our inspiration, our motivation, and our faith to enter into our sitting posture, our zazen. That's why we do sesshin. That's why zazen is at the center of our practice, and that it is this sitting posture and everything, as it was for Dogen. That's why it's so important in sesshin to really try and practice that continuity from the moment we wake up all throughout the day.
Thanks so much for listening. To find out more about our ongoing programs and residency opportunities, visit zmm.org.